That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a segment of Informed Dissent, Pacifica's weekly election special. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by the Pacifica Radio Network, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. You just heard this week's credits for Informed Dissent, produced by people from all over the country just like Sprouts. I'm Otis McClay, executive producer of Informed Dissent. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Sprouts.
I could say only hello and thank you very much, but you spoke so I could understand. And I drew a treasure map on your hand. And you were no picnic, no, you were no prize. But you had just enough pathos to keep me hypnotized, hypnotized.
Next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. It's the November 16th edition of Bathrop's Pierre's Broadside. Stay tuned. Thank you. From Incamaru, Para el Mundo, La Nueva Expresión del Folclor Andino. Peruvian music, for those who don't speak Spanish well, and I'm one of them. Welcome. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, twice weekly show, actually. Every week at this time I do it, and every Sunday morning at 9:30. It concerns itself with civil rights for poor people, or the attempt to get civil rights for the poor people and the rest of us as well, if we aren't as poor as some. And that's actually what I'm going to begin with today. It's kind of where I left off on Sunday when I had a very long show, really a very good show. Unfortunately, a show that did not get archived in the proper place because there was some problem with the stream. So normally these shows, hopefully this show, the one you're listening to now, will be archived online at the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's huffsantacruz.org, where you would normally go to listen to shows that have been that I do twice weekly here. This one, for instance, www.huffsantacruz.org, all one word, all small letters, Huff Santa Cruz. However, the Sunday show didn't make it. We're going to try to post it on the Huff website at a different place and point you in the right direction because it actually has lots of interesting stuff on it. And in particular, it has an interview with people who reported an assault by Lulu Carpenter's manager and owner, Manthri Srinath, way back in 2003 during the anti-war protest. And why is that important to dredge up all this old stuff about a poor beleaguered merchant across from the Veterans Hall and the post office? Well, as many of you know who've been following IndieBay.org, which is a local news site, Santa Cruz Indie Media, or listening to this show, the owner again apparently took the law into his own hands and went out and was abusive to a poor homeless panhandler who's also terminally ill with AIDS, whom he didn't like, and got a police officer to buddy up with him and issue a false citation. And he's being held to account for this because, not because any of us have any particular dislike for Manthree Srinath, though, full disclosure, I've been banned from his restaurant for 3 years, his cafe, actually, the Lulu Carpenter's Cafe, because I tried to get an interview with him about this first coffee-throwing incident, which I'm going to play you again today. I played it at the end of the last show, but since it didn't really... we have it, I believe, recorded for you to review, if you'd like, and for Manthree Srinath to review, too, if you'd like. We've invited him on the air repeatedly, but he's declined to come on, although he's always welcome to call in, as is anyone else. The phone number here, by the way, in case you'd like to call in, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And that's our on-air number. If you want to catch me off-air, try the Huff line. That's 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F. And if you want to leave some advice or ask some questions or some donations or something, public service announcement you want to pass on for free radio here, at the either for this show or for other shows, because we're a 24-hour station and we'd love to be a part of the community and hope that you would become active in this as well, you can give us a call at 427-4523, 427-4523, which is the voicemail for Free Radio, or you can go online to freakradio.org, where hopefully we're streaming even as I speak, and hopefully this show is being saved on the stream, so we actually won't have the same problem as I did last time. Anyway, I'm going to begin today with a repeat of a March 2003 show, part of a show that I did then. I was doing this show 3 years ago as well. And I did some interviews on the street with some people who had an unfortunate encounter with the owner of Lulu Carpenter's. And the reason this is particularly important is because tomorrow we're going to be doing, some of us, I for one, and some other Huff members, and you're invited to a protest in front of Lulu Carpenter's, where we'll encourage people to boycott the cafe until such time as the owner gives a clear explanation that satisfies the community as to what he's doing, perhaps apologizes for what he's done, and indicates he wants to move on using a new approach. So far, that has not been forthcoming. And instead, if you want to see some of the dialogue, and actually I can read some of the dialogue and probably will later in this show, he declines to give his side of the incident where he came up to recently to Shane Maxfield, an AIDS-disabled person who lives in his vehicle and is quite ill, who was sitting on the sidewalk with a sign offering services, and it was either for donation or for exchange for money to power the gas heater in his vehicle, as I understand it. Srinath came up and roundly abused him, told him to leave, even though, well, he has a right to his opinion, but he was so threatening to Shane that Shane made a phone call, a 911 phone call to the police department. Police came down, confirmed that there was nothing that Shane was doing was illegal, didn't attempt, however, to protect him, instead said, "You better move along or we smell a ticket coming," or "I smell a ticket coming," and then gave a ticket to Shane for a false charge, panhandling with obscene language. This because after he had been repeatedly abused and attacked and told to move on by the owner of the upscale Lulu Carpenter's, he said, "You fucker," to him. And that was thereby used by the officer and by Manthree Srinath as a justification for writing a citation for this disabled homeless person who was... Actually, he had a sort of a... You can recognize him on the street, and you may know him because he has a small rabbit, a real live rabbit with him, called Fluffy. And the whole story is chronicled in more detail on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, which is indiemedia.org/Santa Cruz. And you can actually go to top of the local news section on the right, Lulu Carpenter's protest boycott, and Tim Rumford is writing an article on that. Or you can go down further. There's a much longer thread, which I began announcing our previous demonstration last week, Boycott Bigotry at Lulu Carpenter's, 4 p.m. today, 11:10. There are now 37 comments on that thread, quite a number of comments. And the issue is relatively simple, and it's really one that recurs, which is that the police feel they are in a favored, I'm sorry, the merchants feel they are in a favored position to use the police as a private goon squad. And I'm not saying anyone doesn't have the right to come up and be abusive or angry to somebody else. That's the nature of a free society. You can choose to be nice. You can choose to be nasty. You can choose whatever you want to choose. But those choices have consequences. And then when you try to use the police to use force and violence and intimidation to get your goal forward, in this case, Srinath's goal was to remove Maxfield, Shane Maxfield from the area, then you run up against some of us who are concerned that this, shall we say, sets a bad precedent. You might say it establishes, it kind of confirms a reign of terror underneath the placid, bucolic, charming tourista Santa Cruz scene here. In fact, what you have is you have a situation where the merchants can do pretty much what they want with the people on the streets by calling the police and using them, and the whole laundry list of bogus ordinances that they have rammed through the city council or coaxed through the city council or had their representatives on the city council pass in defiance of the Constitution. Not unlike the way we have certain national laws which have been passed, the Military Commissions Act, amendments to the Insurrection Act, the recent, what's it called, Animal Terrorism Prevention Act. Actually, there's been a modification of that, which makes nonviolent protest a federal felony and dubs it terrorism if it results in loss of profits to certain animal products industry, which I've not covered, but I was dumbfounded to read about it. Anyway, tomorrow we're going to be down in front of Lula Carpenter's. You're invited to join us, 4:30 to 6:30. Going to have some coffee and cocoa, and who knows, maybe a scone or two. We're urging people to be aware, make people aware of what's going on at that end of the mall, at least in that particular location, as well as pressing an even more important issue, frankly, the issue of the criminalization of poor people at night. Because while it's only a few people who suffer because of the collusion of the police and merchant Manthri Srinath, generally, I mean, only one or two or three, who knows, although the threat of that put a lot of people in fear and influenced their behavior, everybody who is homeless has to suffer under the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. 6.36010A, the municipal code passed by the Rotkin Matthews City Council, actually it was passed by the Burt Muley City Council in 1978, but ratified repeatedly by Rotkin and Matthews, who are now the big cheeses on the city council, having won the election. This is a law which makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep, not to litter, not to piss, not to set up a huge tent in the middle of the road, not to sleep on your front yard and your doorstep, not to trespass, but to sleep hidden away on public property where they're harming no one when there is no shelter for them. The very act of falling asleep in Santa Cruz, even in your own vehicle, even legally parked in your own vehicle, is criminal. And I apologize to those who've heard this perhaps hundreds, if not thousands of times on this show, and probably thousands, well, probably a couple thousand times it's been mentioned. But there it is. It's still there. And what's interesting is that in San Diego and Los Angeles, the city attorneys of those cities have essentially told the police, stop ticketing at night, because we're going to get the pantsuit off us, and we can't do it because the federal courts, even though the ruling is not active and is currently on appeal, in the Jones case in Los Angeles in Skid Row, have ruled you cannot arrest a homeless person for sleeping unless you have a legal place to send them. Given that if you have no legal place, it's called cruel and unusual punishment to do so, and makes the cities of Los Angeles and presumably San Diego too, because they've accepted this, legally liable. Now, don't mistake what I'm saying. There is no ruling actively in place which even tells the Los Angeles Police Department from the federal court that they have to do this. Rather, the city attorney has decided it is such a threat to the city's finances that this ruling will come into force, that they have decided to, in fact, tell the police, don't do it. You can harass them by calling them drug criminals and run in and rouse them under other pretexts. You can bust them during the day if they have their tents up or if they fall asleep during the day. But for God's sake, don't arrest them at night at this time until we can be sure that everything is okie-dokie and maybe some higher court overrules this. It's not, as I said before, it's not currently the law. It was a decision, but because the decision was appealed, it is not currently law. It is the law is still as written in Los Angeles. You can't sit, sleep, or lie anywhere in Los Angeles on the sidewalks. Except that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said, bullshit, 2-1, that's cruel and unusual punishment. And then the city of Los Angeles said, we appeal, you can't do this, you're ruining our business, help, help. And so in fact, the police still have the legal authority, if they want, to go and arrest people at night, but the city attorney has told them, don't do it. And he's told the San Diego police, that is to say, the San Diego city attorney has said to the San Diego city police the same thing. Obviously, we in Santa Cruz pride ourselves in being at least fractionally more liberal than the Los Angeles and San Diego communities. These are, you know, Orange County, Los Angeles County conservatives. This is where, you know, Schwarzenegger's support comes from. This is conservative Republican territory, much of it. Surprise. Our city attorney, John Barisoni, refuses to do this. Our city council refuses to abide by the Ninth Circuit decision or to understand that it puts the city in significant legal jeopardy, or more important, that this sleeping ban has been held by various bodies, including official city bodies, the city's official homeless issues task force, the city's commission for the prevention of violence against women, as being dangerous to the safety of vulnerable homeless people, because it means that homeless people can't use the police to report crimes against them because they have to fear the whole bunch of tickets that they may have gotten, the warrants that may have piled up for sleeping. And they can't sleep together in groups where they might be safer because they become a target for the police. And they can't sleep in well-lighted areas because by so doing, they again become targets. So this is a real and growing threat, particularly as the weather gets nastier, even though there's more shelter in the winter, and I believe the armory is open. I've been told it has. I haven't checked directly to find out. And that means tonight perhaps there's 150 floor spaces or cot spaces for people to be in. I remind you that there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city alone, not to mention 8,000 to 10,000 or more than that in the county, with absolutely no legal place to go, trying to make their own way, find their own approach to this, keep a low profile, stay out of sight, but still have to do so and become in effect second and third class citizens. And that, of course, is what the decision in Los Angeles was about. That was what the LA city attorney and the San Diego city attorney were essentially responding to. And they don't care if they're citizens who are poor, third and fourth class citizens. They care about risking the city's financial trough. You know, they care about risking the mother load. They don't want to lose it. And what perhaps should concern even conservatives here in Santa Cruz who don't like homeless and are perfectly happy with driving them away or driving them out of town, or liberals who are perfectly happy with saying, oh, well, I wish we could do something, but there really is no place for them. The money, honey. The money is something that has to be concerned with, because the city is legally vulnerable, and perhaps the conservatives, or some of them, will be concerned with that. Anyway, we're going to be circulating a petition tomorrow to the city attorney urging that they do what these other cities have done. Now, this is actually in preparation for a broader action, and that broader action is having put the city attorney on notice that there are hundreds of people who are concerned about this issue, and we're expecting to get hundreds of signatures if we have enough persistence and patience, because I think we got thousands of signatures for an initiative to overturn the sleeping ban in 1998. Not enough to put it on the ballot. We fell short by about 1,000 or so, but thousands. I think we got 3,400 or something, some huge number of registered city voters. We're not just talking, you know, wandering people or, you know, people who flew in to pad the rolls. So there are lots of people concerned about this issue. Once the city attorney gets this and ignores it, as I suspect he will, but I hope he won't, but I suspect he will, Then what we need to do is simply camp in front of his office. Set up a tent and wait for them to come and ticket people. Because every ticket they give, which does not offer a person a shelter space, will be a legal blow against the treasury of the city, according to the Jones decision. And that's not for sure. The decision could be overturned. But the threat of it not being overturned may make give the city pause and may prompt even the most conservative city council in memory to take some precautionary action, open up some additional shelter, suspend the sleeping ban in some areas, put in some porta potties, do the right thing that it should have done decades ago and certainly years ago. That can happen if we put enough pressure on them this winter because of the peculiar circumstance of there being this decision in place, the Jones decision. At least that's the opinion I have, and the opinion that I think a number of people who went to the Huff meeting, which you can do too if you want, every Wednesday, 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning at the county building area. That was our conclusion. So we're working towards that end. If you have any thoughts on this, if you have any tickets you've gotten, I want to hear about them. Actually, if you've gotten a ticket in the last year, that can put you in a position where you may be a successful plaintiff eventually. It won't be easy. It won't be quick. But it will be. We have more legal power now than we ever had. And it also looks like groups like the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty may be beginning to back us up. The ACLU locally is a real paper tiger, although they have done some more good things recently under pressure from the somewhat ambivalent Don Zimmerman. They haven't done anything around the sleeping ban at all, even though we brought it to them again and again and again. They just don't seem to get it that homeless people have to have rights, too. They do have rights that are being ignored, and that it behooves even upper-middle-class liberals to pay some attention to that, even people who have Mike Rotkin on their board of directors. Well, I guess maybe that explains some of it, too. Mike Rotkin, of course, is a former mayor, council member, and I believe he was the second top vote-getter in the current election, which swept him and Cynthia Matthews and Lynn Robinson into power on the city council. And they'll be taking power, I guess, 2 weeks from last Tuesday in the afternoon or maybe it's the early evening session. Phone number here is 427-3772. I'll wait your calls here, 427-3772. While I do, however, I'm going to play this tape, which again is from mid-March 2003. And you're going to be listening to the voice of Olivia Brown Rabbit, who was with activists from the University of California at Santa Cruz, Huff, and other groups instrumental in maintaining a week-long, round-the-clock sleeping ban protest, a vigil against two wars. It was actually it was a protest against the laws that criminalize poor people, like the sleeping ban and the downtown ordinances, but also against, of course, the war in Iraq, which was then rolling, gearing up. The bombing was gearing up. I think they were just beginning. And this was the March 16th show. And here is this tape again for those of you who didn't hear it on Sunday and those of you who might want to hear it again.
We woke everybody up and decided to come here in front of Jamba Juice. And we were fine until the incident with Lulu Carpenter's, where we got hot coffee thrown at us. And specifically Banyan got hot coffee thrown at us.
A sign which has hot coffee on it, and it says boycott Lulu Carpenter's. Rude, disrespectful, aggressive, discriminates against homeless, poor, and peace advocates, power to the people, boycott. What, did you see any of that, or did you just hear about it?
Well, no, what happened was I made a call this morning after I realized that our breakfast wasn't coming because of the car problem. So I made a call to them because I couldn't find my cash card. I called them on the phone at the vet's hall saying, do you take a check? I need to get some breakfast, and I'm a local resident of 48 years, and I have ID, and could I write a check for breakfast? No problem. Come on down. So I crossed the street, went over there, and we ordered breakfast. We got breakfast, and then it must have took me 10 minutes to order and write my check, and the whole time she's watching me, and I needed help to figure out that I'm really terrible about figuring out the tip. So it took me a good 5-10 minutes to figure out the check, and I handed it to her. She takes my ID. She's writing it down. All of a sudden, the manager or owner, I'm not sure who he is, came out and threw us out, said we didn't need our kind and we needed to stay out of here, and he wasn't taking our check, and we left.
It was more, actually, first they didn't take the check and we were telling them, well, we're going to go find the card. But then we couldn't find the card, so we went to Jamba Juice right there. And then when I go back, I, Raquel, go back to the coffee shop to get our three mugs that we had originally gave them, the owner or the manager, whoever he is, took the three cups, you know, while talking to me in a very rude manner, saying, you know, that is so uncool, blah, 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 you shall never, never return to this place.
What did he regard was uncool?
He told me that I was, I don't really remember, it was a word I wouldn't use in brown children. I don't remember. All I know is I wanted to blow up at him.
What was his problem? What did he object to?
For us ordering a lot of food and then not being able to pay for it, even though we were for sure that we could use checks, but they didn't let us. As in,
up and they didn't want our check.
So, and do I understand that at one point they ordered you out because you had a check instead of that they'd agreed you could pay with instead of the card? And then a second time you came in and you got further static from the manager. Is that accurate?
Yes.
The name of the manager?
I don't know.
Describe what he looks like.
He's Arabian looking. He's average height for a male. So, well trimmed hair, mustache or goatee. And, you know, lean, just, you know, average weight. Obviously rich looking, you know. He's dressed, well-dressed.
What was he wearing, you know?
He was wearing a light pants, kind of khaki-looking pants. And I think like a gray shirt. I don't really remember that well. But when I got the cups, I was asking for the cups back. He didn't just hand them to me.
Right.
That was one thing that pissed me off, you know. He threw them on the counter towards me.
What kind of cups were these? Was it metal cups or ceramic cups?
They're plastic mugs for coffee. And he
threw them at you.
Yeah, and they were still, you know, he had obviously dumped the coffee right then, and there was still remaining coffee in there. You know, it splashed on my pants. You know, I was kind of.
Did you call the police?
I didn't, because at first, you know, I didn't want to start trouble because of what I've had happen last night to me. So, and then...
What happened last night to you was this incident with the guns and such?
Yeah, the whole guns, you know, I didn't want really to
about
do
what time did this incident happen?
This one this morning?
Yeah. With Lulu Carpenter.
Around, 8:30, because at 8 o'clock I woke up, half an hour later he's telling me, let's go eat breakfast, yeah.
Is the same manager still on, do you think, or not?
I really do not know, actually.
I could set up a Huff table nearby that informs the public about what the Lulu's has been doing. At some point, I may do that. If, of course, the rains, it can come at any time is a problem, but I may bring a table down. But I would encourage you to file a police report about this issue. You were assaulted. When they throw cups and coffee at you, that's an assault. So I would suggest calling the police and asking to make a citizen's arrest of the manager who did that. What that means is they will go in and issue him a citation and say, I was rather upset when it happened. I'm now a bit calmer, but I need to make it, you know, I'm going to make it not just a complaint, but an arrest about that, and I'd like you to take the arrest. And, you know, a business-like thing. No big deal. Just have them go over and do it. And also, you know, just let it go with that. Get a copy. Ask them to send you a copy of the citation so you know where to go to court and so forth. And you can always drop the charges. But if this has happened to you, you know, unless you think there's a chance to mediate it, I think you need to document it with some kind of police thing. Anyway, that's just my suggestion. So anything else happened since then?
Well, you know, after I went into the coffees, all that, Mom was busy, and then I started talking to her and told her about it. And she stormed in there, and I followed just, you know, to see what was happening.
Let's see what she said. What happened when you stormed in there?
I went back in there, and I told him I didn't appreciate the disrespect we were given in my family. And he's like, told me to get out of here. He was going to call the cops. And I just said that it was regretful that he had to act like this, because we were going to boycott him. And I've been in this area for almost 50 years. And if I don't know somebody, I know somebody that knows somebody. And we're going to exercise our civil liberties and boycott him.
Uh-huh. So, and then what happened? Anything since then? You've been out? That happened about 9 or 10 o'clock?
Yeah, then we put, then I started writing the sign. I got as far as boycott Lulu Carpenters, and he came up, and Banyan was standing next to the, we were all, and as soon as we saw him come up, we sort of all moved back except for Banyan. And
where were you standing?
Right there.
Okay. He threw coffee on Banyan?
Okay. He threw it towards us. We all kind of backed up except for Banyan was right next to the poster.
Second assault. I would suggest a police report immediately. Call the cops.
Okay, well, that's something that we need to discuss upon themselves. This family is involved. Being a single man, you might not appreciate that our families are involved. So we need to, you know.
But I would, as a reporter who's heard about this and a man concerned about civil rights for poor and homeless people, not to mention peace activists, I would probably be putting this in literature, even if I don't name the people involved.
Okay, I appreciate
that. And I will, in fact, go in and ask for his side of the story for free radio if he wants it. So I think I'll go do that. So Banyan, you're Frederick Joseph Carter II, and you were the second person who you say this man assaulted you, the manager of Lulu Carpenters, with coffee.
Yeah.
You then called the police?
Yeah, then I was leaned toward doing that, and I decided to do so, yeah.
How long did the police take to show up?
They were actually quite prompt. I was on the phone maybe for about 5 minutes, and a couple of police officer ladies walked up the street, and I got off the phone with EMS and Santa Cruz Police Department at that time, and then after that, another officer came down. What was that tall blonde officer's name?
Oh, Wendy.
Wendy.
Officer Bynes?
Yeah. She came down on the scene in order to take my report, because I guess she handles, you know, felonies and assaults and reports and all that. Now, the guy didn't get arrested.
Did she go and speak to him?
Did she? Yeah, she went to go. She went to speak with him.
Did you ask if the citizen's arrest be made?
I didn't ask if the citizen's arrest be made, because this, like, never happened to me before. So maybe I was slipping, but maybe I should have. I figured an assault charge, being a violent crime, which would probably be a felony.
Well, at least a misdemeanor.
Okay, well, maybe, but I would figure that it would be, arrestable right then. But I guess not, because, like, I figure if it was me, I'd be arrested real quick, you know, but I think it's just because this guy is, like, a merchant. He's a store owner, manager, whatever the heck he is, and he thinks he's got something over on the homeless, or he's got a personal vendetta, so I don't know what it is, but it ain't right, whatever it is.
Now, did Wendy say she was issuing him a citation?
Wendy did say, do you want to issue him a citation? I said, yes. I says, what will the citation technically be for, to another cop? And she says, I think assault. I don't know that for sure, because I didn't read the citation before I signed it. I should have read it before I signed it, but I assumed that it was for assault, because that's what I wanted to press charges on, and I guess they had enough evidence right there to at least issue the citation.
Did Wendy also hear about Raquel's situation?
She heard them briefly, but right then I don't think they were addressing that, because that's not what they were called for.
Well, I'm going to go in.
That's about all I have to say anyway.
Thank you, Banyan.
Yeah, no problem.
Actually, to clarify this, it wasn't really a voluntary move down here. You kind of felt that there was this pressure from police and guns, and you better...
It's best you move were the exact words.
So, in fact, yeah. Okay, I got you.
So we think it's best you just pack it in. That's what they said. And I said, excuse me, we didn't come this far to give up. And then they sort of converged, and then I heard a comment. Oh, my God, what's it, we're going to hear it on the news. The peaceful protests are welcome with 6 guns or something. They made the remark, and then they were, like, more... They even offered to help us move, and we said no.
Yeah. Very good, very good.
What's being discussed here is what happened previously, earlier in the previous night, as the vigil against two wars was moved around town under the move-along law, which Wendy Bynes used to break up the protest from its original spot and across from the Cinema 9 in front of O'Neill's Sports Shop, where it had been for a week.
I don't know.
So after you stood up for your rights, they were nice.
Yeah, they even offered us to move, but you know, we didn't want to go there.
I realize it would make a very bad picture on the media and on the 8 o'clock news.
You know, well, that's what I heard them. They go, oh, great, because one of them looked at me and said, oh, Mom. And then they put me aside and said, we're very sorry. We didn't know what we walked into. And, you know, so anyway, then I heard her say to the lieutenant, said to him, oh, great, you know, peacemaker, peaceful protesters, you know, showed down with the six guns or something to that effect.
On the radio or was he on the scene?
Well, he was talking to the other officers and shaking his head. No, it was dark. And
who was the white-haired guy?
That was him, Lieutenant, and I don't know his name off that, but he's white-haired. He came on the front page with TJ, that officer.
Okay, I'll have to look him up.
You need to leave my property.
What's your name?
If you don't leave my property, I'll have you arrested.
I'd be happy to leave.
Of course, here you're listening to Man 3, Srinath, ordering me off the property. By that, you should understand the scene. I had walked... I had walked onto, for those who don't know what Lulu Carpenter's looks like, it's a cafe which has an outdoor component which is split by the public sidewalk, as a number of cafes have down near that end of Pacific Avenue. And I had walked, I believe, I had gone into the entrance and I'd spoken to him. He was behind the counter, or else I was simply in the outdoor area on the restaurant side of the sidewalk, and he demanded I leave. I was simply trying to get an interview with him on the subject.
Free radio, I just wanted to know. I'm leaving. We're leaving. We'll be right outside with picket signs. Nope, I'm leaving. I'm going off the property. So, as I was saying, yeah, we had some problems with the police before.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah. So what is this fellow's problem? I came in to talk to him quietly, and he gets all upset.
I believe this is a conversation with a Lulu Carpenter's patron who's sitting out front enjoying some Lulu Carpenter's coffee or something.
No, you know, I think
sir, don't take that glass off my property either. Put that glass over here, and then you can leave.
Hang on, let's get a camera so we can get a picture of this guy.
Let me get this.
And I believe Man 3, when he said, don't take that glass off my property, was referring to the man I was talking to. I hadn't ordered anything, and I didn't have anything in my hand other than a tape recorder, I don't think.
No, I need him to leave. I need you guys to all be 14 or 15 feet away from my property.
No, no, we have a right to stand right here. This is public sidewalk, sir.
Sir.
Bring it on. Come on, bring it on. So anyway, here we are at Lulu Carpenter's on the public sidewalk, and I walked in order as a free radio broadcaster to ask him about an incident that happened across the street. And actually, this fellow here was having a cup of coffee, and we had a brief word, and then what happened?
The guy just pointed at you and said, go off my property. Same thing you did to Jimmy. Unfortunately, with Jimmy, though, if you say anything to him, he's going to come back and yell again and say things, you know. I don't know what the guy's trip is. I think he's just hopelessly paranoid or something of street people.
Do we know his name?
This manager here? No. No. Yeah, Jimmy was around a long time, really bothering him.
Right.
And then he had to come over and tell him to get out of here.
Well, I mean, if there's
they said his name. You say his name. He'll talk, and there he is, right there.
I know. But see, that Jimmy can be a problem because he's problematic. I came in specifically to ask him some questions. He assaulted two people today. This manager has apparently assaulted two people by throwing coffee at them. One guy across the street and a woman across the street. So I wanted to get his side of the story about what was going on, and I guess his side of the story is, get off my property. That's the side of the story. So
apparently they have kind of a policy in effect here at Lulu Carpenter's that if you're not one of the in crowd, then you could get arrested for trespassing for simply being on the premises without any
untoward. Well, I think he's upset about something that's going on. I think he is upset. He's on the phone now. Get a picture of him on the phone. He's right there on the phone. And he's He's concerned about my, you know, asking him the question, what was the problem across the street? And now he somehow feels I have to stand 14 feet away from his property. Yeah. So we have, Lieutenant Saponi. And I guess I better stick pretty close here. And there's the CSO. And I guess Hunter, the host. So we have a congregation of police in the area here. This could be to defend the right of a merchant to abuse poor people, which is an important right in Santa Cruz. By the way, did you... Lieutenant Saponi, when you have a moment, I want to have a word with you. Boy, caught Lulu Carpenters. Lulu Carpenters discriminates against poor people. Thanks. Appreciate that. Hi. Please don't patronize Lulu Carpenters. Discriminates against poor people at this point. Talk to them about it. Thanks. All right. Hey. I was speaking to an anonymous person here who said that she has had conversations with employees in which the employees say that they have, well, should we say, been spoken to in an elevated tone of voice publicly by the manager. Is that accurate?
Yes, in front of customers in the cafe.
And we had a longer interview with this person, but she's a bit concerned about maintaining her anonymity, and so we are not broadcasting it. Is a police officer available to be spoken with at this point?
Give us a few minutes, Robert. We'll get to you.
Just need 2 minutes with one police officer.
Leave us alone, Robert. We'll get to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lieutenant. I've been trying for 10 minutes. I know you're very busy. Well, it's quite a collection of squad cars here, man. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So I'm just trying to understand. I have no quarrel with anybody in Lulu Carpenters, and I'm just wondering. I understand that an assault charge has already been filed against the manager.
Right.
I know there's a second woman who was assaulted who's chosen so far not to file charges.
Okay.
You probably know about that. And I went over there just to, I've been a customer for years, and I wanted to find out what went on, because I do a radio show, and I wanted to give him a chance to have his say.
Right.
And I actually, then I... the question I had for you was a very simple one. It was...
me talking to...
Well, it's not really a question, because I think I know the answer, but I want to get your thoughts on it, which is the manager, in a heated voice, demanded that I stand 14 feet away from his business. Now, of course, I told him, no, I can't sit next to your business. I can't spare change next to your business. I certainly can't abuse your customers, but... I've got a right to stand here all I want, you know. I mean, provided I'm not disturbing the peace.
Right.
And he raced to the phone to make a phone call, and I said, I think the police will probably confirm that. I wanted to get your confirmation on that.
No, I think your interpretation is correct, Robert. If there's a disturbance and it disrupts his business, of course, then there's 415, there's disturbing the peace.
Right.
And as far as my understanding is similar to yours, if you're standing and carrying on peacefully, there's no restriction against that. The other behaviors you described, yes.
Yeah, but, sure. And I mean, my intention...
He's very frustrated. It's been a very frustrating day, I guess, for him. And having somebody stand outside your business and tell people not to patronize your business...
It's very frustrating.
And very irritating, I'm sure. And I think he was looking to see if he had legal recourse. So
I'll probably call on perhaps extra legal recourse, perhaps.
Well, I wouldn't even say that. I think he's trying to figure out if he had... any way to legally prohibit you from doing that.
And that, of course, was Lieutenant Saponi explaining Manafri Srina's position. We have a caller on the phone who's got a very important question, actually. Hi there, caller.
Hi.
You've been listening to this. Have you heard most of this controversy here on the air?
Yeah.
And what's your question?
I was wondering what I could do to put pressure on the ACLU.
Are you a member of the ACLU?
No, I'm not. How do you become a member?
You what?
How would you go about becoming a member?
Oh, I think they have a. I think they meet the last Monday or Tuesday of the month. I can actually get that information to you. And actually, if you call the local ACLU Drug Policy Project, the National ACLU Drug Policy Project has an office right above Taqueria Vallarta down on Pacific Avenue, if you know Pacific Avenue. They're at Pacific and Cathcart. That's not the local ACLU. The local ACLU, I don't even know if they have an office. They're kind of a... They've expanded a lot because, you know, under the Bush administration, a lot of people have been afraid of what the Bush administration has been doing. But the irony is that the local ACLU, with a few exceptions, does very little to deal with violations of civil liberties at the local level. They don't want to, the way I interpret it, they don't want to offend the local power structure.
Huh. Yeah, that's what it seems like. I don't understand.
You know, I mean, I think we have tried... We've gone to their meetings repeatedly. They nod and they smile at us, and we explain that there's a whole bunch of selective enforcement going on downtown where, as in this case with Manafree Srinath, the manager or the owner of Lulu Carpenters, he can file a false report and a false charge against a homeless person and without any consequences to himself other than, you know, us setting up a little table and chanting boycott Lulu Carpenters for a little while, which, you know, I suppose has some effect on him, makes him a little nervous. But in the long run, it doesn't have the same effect. We can't say to him, okay, move along, you know, you're harassing people on the street and have the police move him along. That's not within our purview. We can't do that. He's got too much, oomph. So you're asking the question is, how do we, trying to get the ACLU to do something about this, it's like trying to get the city council to do something about it. You know, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't try to do it. I commend you for doing it. I mean, the first thing you could do is you could call them up and say, I'm really concerned about local civil liberties violations, and I feel like you're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would join and I would help out, but, you know, I've heard these nasty accusations against you on this crazy radio show, and, you know, I don't know what to think. You're asking me a question. I'm not really giving you a very clear answer.
No, it's fine.
Which is, what do you do about the ACLU? I guess you write poetry and read it in the air. You talk about it. You expose it. You document. What you really need to do is you need to take the place of the ACLU. You need to keep your eyes open to see where abuses occur, where people are being treated like bags of shit or less than full citizens. And it's like keeping your eye on the voting process. You heard a lot of people talk about, you know, the Diebold voting machines and, you know, possible voter fraud. Well, you got the same situation with the police force. You know, the police have a lot of power in this town, and the merchants have a lot of pull with the police. I mean, I've claimed frequently that the police act like private security forces for the merchants frequently. And the way to deal with that, well, the way I deal with it is I raise a ruckus. I mean, you hear me speaking in a mellow voice here. But if you come down to the boycott bigotry protest tomorrow, which we'll be doing from 4:30 to 6:30 in front of Lulu Carpenters or nearby, you'll hear us shouting boycott bigotry at Lulu Carpenters and encouraging people not to go in and encouraging people also to sign the petition to end the sleeping ban by demanding the city attorney follow the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals Jones decision. So... you know, you can get involved with Huff if you want. That's what I would, you know, I'd like to pump the organization because we need help. So if you'd like to help us out, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave your phone number, and we'll get back to you, and I'll talk to you some more about things you might be interested in doing that we could, one of them might be going to an ACLU meeting and being an observer, you know?
Might be interesting. Since they're, like, the only ones really that would be able to do anything in this area.
Well, you know, I think they're not the only ones, but I mean, they're the ones
at a legal level.
Well, anybody can file a lawsuit. You don't need to be an ACLU person. You need to get a lawyer, or you need to act as your own lawyer to do it. And it takes time and takes some information. Anybody can raise an issue. They can do it in a letter to the paper. You could write a letter to the Sentinel today saying, you know, I'm concerned that our local American Civil Liberties Union doesn't seem to be doing anything for poor people. Doesn't seem to care if their rights are violated downtown. I mean, the ACLU...
I just meant they have all the, like, kind of backing behind them already.
They do, but, you know, they rely also upon the ignorance of Well, let me put it this way. I think the ACLU probably has some good people in it. And I think that good people can make bad decisions, and good people can be asleep at the wheel, and good people can make bad choices. And people in positions of power who are good sometimes continue to repeatedly act in a bad way. I mean, you know, I've heard people praising the owner of Lulu Carpenter's, Manthree Srinath, for other kinds of things. Like, he says that he has given away free food regularly, and he'd do it more regularly if it weren't for bad activists like me, which doesn't really make much sense. But you know, he does say that he's interested in that in stuff like that. And
well,
I have
you're
heard. What's
bad because you don't go away.
Well,
you're always around.
Well,
is that
I'm,
it?
No, I raise the issue, and he doesn't like me to raise the issue
when he behaves badly.
Like, you know.
The issue not go away.
Right. The issue is I should shut up and go home and let him treat people the way he wants. And you know, eventually that will probably happen because, you know, we can't spend our lives trying to regulate this guy. And nor should we. I mean, it's his decision what he does. But it's our decision whether we regard this, how we're going to treat businesses downtown that do this. And I think it also sends a message to other businesses that are, you know, it says, before you abuse a person outside and think you can get away with it, remember, people are watching. Some people are watching. So just a minute. That doesn't mean you're going to get an ACLU lawsuit. It doesn't mean you're going to, you know, that there's going to be a big city council resolution. But it does mean that you may have to pay a certain cost if you do that. And that's what this kind of exposure is about. It's making the public aware of what they're doing and then letting the public choose. So,
yeah.
I'm talking a lot. What are your thoughts on any of this?
I don't know. I was kind of right next to Lulu Carpenter's. I didn't know if you had any opinion on what's going on there.
You mean the Asian Rose, the destructive?
No. The new, I guess they approved the.
The Ron Lau property that's now being used for condos.
Yeah.
I don't think much of it. I think it's. The kind of redevelopment that cuts out poor people, that doesn't provide, you know, a hotel downtown which had some single room occupancy for people would be probably a good thing. I think that was even being proposed at one time by the owner, Ron Lau. But and instead, this is one of these upscale projects that's going to bring us more yuppie scum from
exactly.
over the hill.
Exactly. You know, I'm afraid of.
And I say this not because the people who are yuppie scum aren't necessarily good people, but because, you know, it's a class of people that if you cater to a rich class of people, then you get into a mindset where it's perfectly okay for people like Manthree Srinath to do what he did to Shane Maxfield because they don't belong in this part of town anyway, you know. You know? So. Yeah, I would love it if you got in touch, called the Huff line, and we could, you know, we could try to, you know, at least make some suggestions as to what to do. I'm sorry I haven't got more specifics for you offhand right now.
What time do you meet on Wednesdays? I forget.
We meet Huff meets every Wednesday at 9:30 in the morning. It's right outside the.
I could actually be there.
Sorry.
I think I could actually make it.
Oh, wow, that'd be great. Yeah, we're right in the area, the atrium area between the county building and the courthouse. Right before you go into the metal detector to go into the courthouse, you'll see us sitting at a table, you know, reading the newspaper or growling or drinking coffee or something. You know, so. Yeah, come on down at 9:30. If you can't make a meeting, just give a call to 423 Huff, and I or somebody else will call you back and. And say, well, you can. If you're interested, you can do this. If you're interested, you can do that. Or, you know, here's some more literature. Or if you want to come tomorrow to the Lulu Carpenter's protest, you can come and observe us in action, 4:30 to 6:30, right there in front of Lulu Carpenter's on Pacific Avenue.
Okay.
What's your name?
Turtle.
Hey, Turtle. Have you called before?
A couple of times. Yeah.
Well, thank you for calling again. I appreciate it. Yeah, definitely get involved. I mean, if you want, it can be really a good thing both for you and for those you're helping. And you know, although it may also have its costs, it can be frustrating too. And you know, activists often turn on each other and beat each other up and sort of thing.
Depends on your temperament, I guess.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling. Anything else you want to pass on?
No, I don't think so.
Thanks, Turtle.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Phone line 427-3772, 427-3772 is open. So give a call if you'd like. I am playing the Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes Bears Broadside show way back from 2003 when there was an earlier instance where Manafree Srinath, by the accounts of three people, threw coffee twice on homeless activists who are also peace activists. And that certainly isn't a good thing. He suffered no consequences. The citation disappeared, never went to court. Interesting, isn't it? Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Bob, Human Rights Organization.
Hey, Uncle Bob, what's happening?
Well, we talked a little bit earlier today about some things, and I heard at least portion of your program here earlier, and I appreciate you mentioning the possible lawsuit and the looking for people that have received tickets, like you know, people that are on the road and the not-so-happy campers that have probably been harassed by police for sleeping and such. We're looking for people to join the lawsuit, possible lawsuit still, you know, attorneys still gabby. But particularly around the numbers on the ticket, if people are looking at their tickets, it's MC 6.3 6.010A. It's the sleeping ban that we commonly call it. And then the other ones would be 010B and 010C, the blanket ban and the camping ban. We have some fairly significant, I'm still going to call it that, significant, not particularly guaranteed help from attorneys, but if the next step would be they'd want to interview people that want to be, have their case looked at to help bring relief around these laws, these laws that are anti-homeless laws. And it looks fairly promising, especially around what's been going on, as you've told your listeners many times about the Los Angeles, Jones versus the city of Los Angeles, and the Ninth Circuit Court saying that their sleeping ban was cruel and unusual punishment, have them in a situation where they're not enforcing their camping sleeping ban, and also San Diego has also put a moratorium on the sleeping camping ban ticketing. So we may get a little relief here, or at least a little bit of attention. And I'm encouraging your listeners that do have tickets or know if people have tickets, or we're talking about meeting times and places. The Human Rights Organization meets every Saturday from 1:45 to 2:45 at the Homeless Service Center, and that's 115 Coral Street. And I'd be interested in leaving both my telephone number and the website, if that's okay.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, so the local number, 425-4467. And once again, that's 425-4467. And the website is the www.humanrightsorg.org. Don't spell out the organization, but it's humanrightsorg.org.
That's 425-4467 for the Human Rights Organization, www.humanrightsorg.org.
That's right, Robert.
And that's for people who have citations, gotten citations in the last year for sleeping, blanket use, or camping in the Santa Cruz area?
Yeah, we're particularly looking for to get people that have had the tickets to come and see us. And it's in preparation for interviews on the lawsuit if people want to be involved. They need to have a contact number, and we may be able to arrange that if we can see their tickets and interview them just briefly and get a sense that they're committed. Once again, it's still in the working process, so until we get a commitment or get some attorneys to actually visit to do the interviews. Right now, we're just trying to build up some resources.
Yeah,
we're looking for people to help also. I mean, if people want to come and help interview, go to some of the parks, go to some of the places where we commonly meet or see, you know, homeless people, and ask them and about their situation with the camping, and find out if they have tickets, and then, you know, make either copies or take pictures of, or write down the information on the ticket, and then we'll have this source when the attorneys come to do the interviews.
Yeah, so pass on the word to people you may know out there who've gotten sleeping or blanket or camping tickets, and, you know, have them give a call to either the Human Rights Organization, and that's, again, at 425-4467, or the Huff line at 423-HUFF.
Definitely.
And we'll get in touch with you.
Go to both of those meetings, or, you know, at least one of them.
Yeah, go to all the meetings and bring lots of money.
There you go.
There
you go. Exactly.
Actually, hot coffee or cocoa will be provided at the Huff meeting, and there'll be some cocoa coffee tomorrow for those stalwarts who show up for the Lulu Carpenter's showdown, so to speak.
Yes, the Human Rights Organization, well, actually one member already, Bernard Kushner, has been involved with the Lulu Carpenter demonstration, but we're also be handing out some literature around our organization, and this is National Homeless and Hunger Awareness Week, so we're going to recognize that, at least in the sense of trying to get some recognition from the community. I mean, there's no real easy answers to the homelessness, but we definitely need the public to get involved in, you know, helping this growing homeless situation.
Hey.
That's what we're hoping to do with some leafleting alongside the Lulu Carpenter.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue really has to do with the sleeping ban and what's going on with homeless people this winter. I mean, we're at Lulu Carpenter's because it's an instance of the kind of abuse we're talking about, but the main issue is the city and the police cracking down on homeless people regularly as a sort of a matter of established law. It's like having slavery in force. You know, you don't see slaves being beaten all the time, but the laws are enforced to do it, and it just happens. People are treated in a very bad way, and the basic human function, the need to sleep, is ignored and criminalized because you haven't got the do-re-mi. So anyway, give a call to you, Bob, at 425-4467, and anything else you want to say?
Oh, not necessarily. Appreciate your radio program and your time to talk about some of the issues, and keep up the good work.
All righty, then.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that leaves the phone line open. 427-3772 is the number to call. Yeah, I don't want to give the false impression this is going to be, I use the word showdown. This isn't really a showdown. This is, we're going to be raising the issue of discrimination and collusion between police and merchants, and this particular merchant and the police department, and I don't think it's that unusual, frankly. I don't think he's the only offender. But this is a really clear case, in my view, and, you know, the only pressure that we can put is your participation in this action. Again, more important than this, maybe, is planning future actions that deal with the reality of the need to set up a tent city so that we can force the police and the city authorities to say, okay, we're going to start ticketing you, and that going on record that we're violating your Eighth Amendment right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, which is what the Ninth Circuit Court decision in the Jones case says, or they have to ignore it and allow people to for once sleep at night in a group of people together that's mutually supportive. Admittedly, it's not with the best circumstance. A protest sleep out has a certain energy, but it also has a certain vulnerability. So there's always that. And it's been tried before, and someone said, well, it's been tried and it's failed. Well, it hasn't really failed. Every time we do it, I think we exert more momentum. Every time we do it, it results ultimately in some changes, even though there's small modifications. And there are those, of course, who say that it's counterproductive, who say that it produces more attention to homeless people who would otherwise be left alone. And here's a bunch of activists making headlines. They just want, the glamour of publicity, or they're using homeless people who don't want to be used. These are claims that are made. And they have to be considered, too. I mean, it is true that, you know, when some black people stood up and drew the attention of the country to their civil rights violations, other black people who had kind of had an arrangement may have suffered because they were blamed for the high-profile behavior of the activists. You know, I mean, that's not entirely a false consideration. The question is whether the struggle is worth it. There's a very little bit more of this 2003 tape, which I'm going to play. I noticed that for some reason there's a 20-minute gap in this tape coming up, the actual show that I did. Now, the tapes that I made on the street I can probably recover, and I'm going to go look for them so that, you know, we can actually hear more about what happened in a future show, although probably more fruitful things to do than reiterate what Lulu Carpenter's owner has done and how unrepentant he is. And it's interesting to go to, if you go to the website and observe and read what he's written in response to this stuff. I'll read a little bit of what he said, and you can check it out too. It's on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and it's under the story "Boycott Bigotry Demo at Lulu Carpenter's 4 p.m. today." And that was a thread that began last week. And here are the kinds of comments that he writes. Let's see here. Going back a bit, I write something like, let's see. "The issues, of course, are, was Manthri Srinath's behavior toward Shane Maxfield sufficiently abhorrent and discriminatory as to persuade those of goodwill to boycott his business, or his businesses, since he also has the coffee cat up in Scotts Valley? Did police collude with Srinath in issuing a false citation, i.e. both a false report and a false arrest? How prevalent is this practice on Pacific Avenue, where police act as private security for the merchants, regardless of the rights of those involved? And what other businesses are specifically involved in this kind of behavior, and what can we do? I noticed there was a caller. Try calling again, caller, 427-3772. Looks like you are. Those are questions I raised, and we'll give you his answers in just a moment. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Madison.
Hey, Madison, what's cooking?
Well, we got a letter in the mail, and the website is www.sc.
Excuse me, Madison, we are talking right now about the issue
homeless.
Of Lulu Carpenter's, and I'm reading specifically. Are you listening to the show?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the issue I really want to talk about at the moment. If you want, you can call back in a few minutes if the issue is about the general issue of homelessness, because I'm trying to kind of get this, you know.
Right, they want to do an incubator for tech guys, the rich white guys. Why not do one to help the homeless up?
Right on.
That's my thing. It's so...
Yeah,
or
call back with more details. I'm not going to lose my thread on this, Madison.
I'll call back.
Okay. So I raised those questions on this website, and Manthri Srinath, or at least somebody who signs himself Manthri Srinath, writes, "That's a pretty good list there, horse." He doesn't call me Norse. He calls me horse. "I'm glad you think that's witty. It cracks me up." That's his writing. "You missed a few things, though. How does Robert Norris know what happened between Shane and the owner of Lulu's? What information leads Robert Norris to believe that a false report was filed or that Shane was arrested falsely? How does Robert Norris come to the conclusion that the police colluded with the owner of Lulu's in this matter?" And these aren't bad questions, except that I've answered them in previous posts. They come from Shane's account. They come from investigations by Tim Rumford. They come from looking at the actual writing of the ticket, which claims that Shane panhandled with obscene language. And, in fact, he did not. He defended himself against a verbal assault from Srinath by saying, "You fucker," after Srinath wouldn't go away. And also, of course, Shane is a disabled guy. He takes a lot of medications for AIDS and is not in the best of health and can sometimes, you know, respond with some anger. And that's not a crime to do that. And Srinath knows that, and so does the police officer. That's why it's a false report and a false arrest. How do I know that happened? Well, that's the report I got from Shane and from Tim, who also interviewed some other folks. So I believe it to be the case, but most important, I believe it to be the case because there is no account that contradicts that. Srinath writes 10 or 11 replies, long replies in which he kind of sarcastically attacks me on Indy Bay. But in not one of them is he willing to set out what his perception of what happened was. He just makes a number of comments such as, he says, I just found out about all this yesterday when you guys showed up. A couple of points. Number one, I dropped the ticket against Shane a while back, so he's off the hook. I also said on another site where I found you, I don't have time to chase down an AIDS patient with a rabbit and a screw loose. Also, as is usually the case, when fringe elements boycott us, business went up and not down. Don't give yourself that much credit. Also, thanks for posting the text of your note. I didn't see them. My staff threw all of them in the trash. These were notes that we asked people to give to the management. People left their name, their email, and their phone number, asking Manafree Srinath to give a call and explain his side of the story. Instead, of course, they threw them in the trash. My staff threw them all in the trash because they were cluttering up our space. And as far as restitution goes, you must be joking. Lastly, with the exception of you, Robert Norris, Becky Johnson, Christopher Crone, who are banned for life, we don't care how much money is in someone's account, only that we are paid full price when they come in and they follow our rules and respect our business. Lulu's is not for everyone. For those who get it, it's a very special place, largely because it's free of people like you. Glad you enjoyed yourself last night. See ya, Manfree Srinath. And then he writes again, I also have friends who have died of AIDS. I've employed more than a few HIV-positive folks in my businesses. I have given to AIDS charities at one time, was the largest corporate contributor to Habitat for Humanity in a city where a company I previously owned was headquartered. So I dare say I've done considerably more than you and your other activist buddies have towards solving these problems. Inconsiderately camping in the middle of business district outside New Leaf, I think you said, every week to prove a point. Perhaps he's referring to the feeding program that Tim Rumford does every Monday night. I encourage people to check it out in front of New Leaf between 6 and 9. He calls it camping in front of New Leaf. Is the sort of behavior that makes me and most other hardworking business people dislike you. Again, it's not causes that you are co-opting, it's you personally. If it wasn't for Robert Norris and gang, I would be very active locally in these same causes. This is the only town I've lived in where I haven't been involved in these issues. So much for your activism. If you are genuinely trying to help the indigent, the way to do it is to win over people with resources, not threaten them by holding an empty gun to their heads. No worries, I shan't be embarrassing you by posting again here. I'll see you next time you boycott outside. And, of course, he posts 8 more times, so he obviously is interested. He then writes again, Horse, and that's Norse he's referring to. I promised Rumford that I would not post here again, but I really can't resist. The target practice is just so juicy. So here we go, point by point. 40 people turning in inquiry slips, which, let's see. I, too, commend you guys for your persistent pressure on this, quote, issue. It has generated some great publicity, and of all people, Norse, you should know that's always a good thing. We received not a few calls this morning from people in hysterics over your show, and we then proceeded to have the busiest morning in our 16-year history. Come to think of it, it's been a hell of a weekend, too. As for talking to a journalist, as soon as you can produce a real one on, say, KUSP, I will gladly sit down to talk. I don't interview with pretend journalists who are living on mom and dad's money, especially not ones with decades-old wrinkles and long gray beards. I don't owe you or anyone an explanation for anything, which is why you won't get one. Certainly you are in no position to demand my attention when you criticize me. I mostly use your incendiary remarks as humor at dinner parties, but that's it. I didn't reply to your crude comments at City Council, and this refers to the fact that I just simply described what happened at City Council. I guess he found I said that Shane Maxfield had at one point said, you fucker, and in response he got a false ticket, and that was considered crude. I think using the police to harass a person who's terminally ill and drive him away from a public space is very crude. well, maybe it's very sophisticated. I don't know. It's pretty bad in any case. What do you say to a comic besides, ha? Also, as a responsible participant in the process, I deem it appropriate not to behave the way you do in public. Thanks for acknowledging that my customers are elite. I think they would concur, as I recommended earlier, keeping the likes of you off the property. You do remember that you will never set foot in any business I own, right? Goes a long way towards creating the great atmosphere that Lulu's customers and coworkers enjoy.
please let me know if you can. If you need financial help on those buttons. We're looking to get some buttons that say banned for life from Lulu Carpenter's boycott bigotry. That may happen tomorrow, although it's kind of short notice for the button maker. I may be able and willing to offer some. I would be nice to have, be able to identify your pals ahead of time. It would have saved a lot of annoyance in 2003, for example. And lastly, yes, we do have the same policies in Scotts Valley. The difference there is that, to their credit, the entire city does as well. I'm curious, how does it feel to live your life as a caricature? Nice chatting, as always. Hugs and kisses, Manafree Srinath. And he goes on in that vein, but nowhere there does he actually describe what actually happened in the incident for those who are looking in. So, anyway, we'll be down at Lulu Carpenter's tomorrow, 4:30 to 6:30. You're invited to join us. And Manfrey, if you're listening, you're, of course, invited to come by, too. And, you know, it's a public sidewalk, a diverse area. If you want to give your point of view, you're welcome to do so. And I will be encouraging people to boycott Lulu Carpenter's. And who knows, perhaps, I don't know, about the coffee cat up in Scotts Valley that he owns. It's not really a personal vendetta against Manfrey Srinath. It is about an attempt to say that you can't, businesses have no right to use the Santa Cruz Police Department, and the police department has no business colluding with businesses to harass poor and homeless people who aren't engaging in any criminal behavior just because the business person doesn't like them there. You know, it's just clear violation of basic constitutional rights and violates the spirit of Santa Cruz and makes me pissed. So that's part of where it's at. So, if you have any thoughts on that, 427-3772 is a phone number you can call. And I am taking a look as well at this other issue, which I think is perhaps even more to the point. In Los Angeles, here's a story from the Los Angeles Downtown News. Street sleeping settlement goes nowhere. Proposed ACLU city compromise falters after mayor withdraws support, by Kathleen Nye Flynn in the Los Angeles Downtown News. For the second time in less than 3 months, the city council refused to approve a settlement to a lawsuit that would have allowed homeless people to sleep on 50 blocks of downtown. The latest action occurred Tuesday afternoon when the council, meeting before hundreds of people on both sides of the issue, chose not to vote on the matter. So they didn't reject it. They didn't vote on it. And, in fact, the city attorney has still got this no tickets at night policy. That's my addition to this. The council's move followed a dramatic about-face from Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who had strongly pushed for settling the lawsuit filed by the ACLU. Late Monday night, Villaraigosa sent a letter to council members saying that he had asked the city attorney to withdraw his recommendation to approve the settlement in the face of community opposition. Downtown Councilwoman Jan Perry led the opposition to the settlement. "I think it's good that people had a chance to express themselves and that there's an acknowledgement that their concerns were heard," she said after the council session. The November 14th action came nearly 3 months after the settlement first surfaced in council chambers on September 20th after vehement outcry from downtown stakeholders, that is to say, conservative merchants. The council voted 10-3 to reject a settlement crafted by the ACLU and city leaders. The city leaders were the police chief, the city attorney, the mayor. That would have allowed homeless people to sleep on downtown streets from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. 7 days a week. On Tuesday, the council, which moved to close session after hearing public testimony, opted not to vote on the settlement. Villaraigosa said in his letter that he would like to rewrite the city's initial policy that had originally outlawed sleeping on the street altogether. He said he hoped to come up with legislation that would sanction limited street sleeping citywide, as well as incorporate a comprehensive plan for more housing and support services. So, according to what the mayor is saying, he wants to allow street sleeping all over the city in some limited way rather than, say, concentrated on the Skid Row area where it's currently was the subject of the court case and of the ACLU lawsuit. The court found in favor of the plaintiffs, of the homeless people suing, but again, that is technically on hold because it's being appealed and they're working to settle it independently. And I think it's the settlement process that's delaying whether the Ninth Circuit is going to take it up, because they're still talking about settling it. So a lot of us have wondered, why hasn't this decision gone up for a full, what's called, en banc panel review, which means not just three judges from the Court of Appeals of the Ninth Federal District view it, but all, 15 or 20 judges have a larger panel in view it. That's what happens if they grant the so-called en banc panel. And usually that comes fairly quickly, I'm told, and that was supposed to come soon after the April decision was originally handed down. But apparently it's been delayed because the city is considering settling it. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
So you ready to do something local about this incubator and the homeless?
Well, I'm not quite finished with this particular thing I'm reading. So I guess the answer is no, I'm not ready. But why don't I give you a few, 30 seconds or a minute to briefly talk about it so people can know what you're concerned
about. Yeah, it's that they want to do a tech incubator, and it's www.scincubator.org, where you can comment. And basically, Santa Cruz, the homeless need a place to be able to come in, use a phone, and set up a business and be shown how. Rich, wealthy, white tech boys with degrees already, with four other incubators over the hill. We don't need another tech incubator. We don't need a boom and bust economy in Santa Cruz. We need art, tourism, cottage industry, and women in business and homeless in business. That's what this town is about. And to strut in here with a boom and bust, non-green, defense-related economic idea for an incubator, in my opinion, is utterly idiotic.
Okay, well, thank you.
So if anyone agrees, it's www.scincubator.org. Tell them we want green, we want homeless, we want art, we want tourism.
Thanks, Madison.
Don't want defense.
So, yeah, I think the idea of homeless businesses is, that requires a lot of capital investment, too. But I certainly favor a return of something like the Santa Cruz Switchboard, which had obvious services for people. And you didn't have to, grovel and be some kind of, claim to have 16 disabilities and go out to the homeless service center and, be ghettoized on the outskirts of town. This was back in the 70s when there actually was the Santa Cruz Switchboard on Pacific Avenue. Times have gotten pretty nasty and pretty prejudicial since then. And it's too bad. Continuing with this story from Los Angeles, which I was reading, again, about an important issue of the Santa Cruz City, Los Angeles City Council and what's going on there. Let's see if I can actually find the damn thing. Looking for it here. Here we go. A council ad hoc committee on homelessness, which includes Perry and council members Bill Rosendahl and Eric Garcetti, is already working with representatives of the ACLU and the LAPD to redraft the language of the city's original street sleeping policy. It is an extremely complex issue, and it shows the importance of the ad hoc committee to work towards the solutions we can all agree on, Perry said. In the meantime, LAPD officers in the Skid Row area have been issuing warnings and citing people for sleeping on the street during daytime hours or if they are blocking businesses while sleeping at night. This, of course, is what Santa Cruz needs to be doing, not issuing citations for this or warning people or giving them citations during the day, but at least guaranteeing that they will not be arrested at night. And indeed, obviously, the really appropriate thing would be to set up some campground areas, some car parking areas, so that it can be done reasonably and in a more organized, perhaps safer way. That, of course, is something that Mike Rutkin has indicated he's just not interested in doing. And he's, of course, the shadow mayor we have now, though Cynthia Matthews is the titular mayor, the mayor with the title. Months of mediation. A proposed settlement was a result of an ACLU lawsuit, this is where it all came from, filed after people were arrested for sleeping on the streets of downtown. In April, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the ACLU, deeming it cruel and unusual punishment to arrest somebody for sleeping on the street if the city did not offer an alternative, such as an open shelter beds. That led to months of mediation talks with the ACLU, ultimately reaching an agreement with city officials. The compromise, backed by Villaraigosa, city attorney Rocky Degdenio, and police chief William Bratton, called for allowing homeless people to sleep on the streets overnight in an area bounded roughly by Main, Alameda, 4th, and 7th Streets. The compromise called for tents to be at least 10 feet from businesses and doorways. At Tuesday's meeting, and of course in Santa Cruz, tents are banned 24 hours a day unless you happen to have a pay camp spot in one of the state parks, or unless you are in a backyard on private property with the permission of the owner. At Tuesday's meeting, representative of groups for and against the settlement, representatives took the podium. Estella Lopez, executive director of the Central City East Association, told the council to protect the business community in downtown. They depend on you, council, to keep them safe from violence and communicable disease, she said. Well, this is perhaps as bad as Robert DeFreitas and other people from the downtown neighbors talking about sex perverts among the homeless camping in residential neighborhoods and threatening the safety of those in homes. That's the kind of nasty crap we get here in Santa Cruz. But the same kind of fear, the same kind of bigotry, the same kind of essentially irrelevant fear-mongering is used. Steve Richardson, a resident in the Skid Row area, lambasted the council for the heightened police presence, which is a component of the Safer Cities initiative. Then he turned to the businesses, the business community in attendance, and asked, "What are you so scared of?" Councilmember Jose Huzar, who voted for the settlement in September, followed Villaraigosa's lead and told the council he would like the ad hoc committee to work out a new version of the street sleeping policy. Homelessness is a countywide issue and should not be concentrated in an area, the czar said last week. The czar issued an ordinance that would outlaw camping on city streets. Apparently issued meaning he probably put together. He's a council member. He can't really issue an ordinance. Mark Rosenbaum, the ACLU attorney who negotiated the case, said that he agreed with some downtown business advocates that the city's compromise is insufficient. "We didn't file this lawsuit so people can sleep on the street," he said. "We filed this lawsuit so people with no other alternative have an option without getting arrested." Rosenbaum said that if the council does not approve the settlement but decides to rewrite the street sleeping policy, the ACLU might help. "It's up to the council if they come back and say that they are ready to deal with homelessness, and part of that solution would involve services and supportive housing. We're willing to talk about that," Rosenbaum said. "I agree with the businesses and the residents who say that there shouldn't be a designated Skid Row, but we should not criminalize the homeless." You know, I don't know about that. I mean, I know Skid Row has a nasty sound to it and has the assorted gin mill 19th century London quality to it. But it's also true that people, interestingly, you know, people have their own... They stick with their own kind. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. If people can be together in their own community without some kind of social service oversight and bureaucratic authorities telling them what to do, or they make their own rules, come up to their own agreements, work out their own difficulties, that to me is always better. I mean, you know, as you see this in microcosm in macrocosm over in Iraq, you know, where the United States thinks it can dictate with violence and murder and terror what an entire nation will do. And, of course, they're completely wrong, and their terror will eventually turn on us and is already turning on us, but it's likely to turn on us more. The irony will be if the terror turns on us, that'll give more power to the McCains and the Liebermans and those who want to send more troops over there and the Wolfowitzes and so forth, who think it's a great idea to bomb Iran and so forth. I'm skipping to another thing here, but the question of do you want to eliminate Skid Row and instead provide, I don't know, little hospital wards or little sort of halfway houses for homeless people. It's my belief that they're, you know, everybody's got different problems, and, you know, drug abuse can be a problem, and alcohol abuse can be a problem, and so-called mental illness can be a problem. But the main problem for homeless people is lack of jobs and lack of housing. They don't need to be retrained how to write resumes. They need to have some decent housing available. something that the city won't even pay its give its lowest paid workers a chance to get into because it's so concerned about its merchants downtown that you don't see any of the Santa Cruz City Council, I guess with the exception of Fitzmaurice and Madrigal. Didn't hear Madrigal doing it much, but I must imagine he must have, standing up for the defeated Measure G, the minimum wage. But the L.A. Times doesn't like the idea of the street sleeping settlement. They say, this week the Los Angeles City Council will have a second chance to weigh in on the sidewalk encampment issues before they essentially sent it back to committee. At the behest of City Attorney Rocky Delgadillo, who is being pushed by Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, the group is being asked to consider again the proposed settlement of an ACLU lawsuit. The previous effort sought to allow people to sleep overnight on 50 blocks of sidewalk in downtown Los Angeles. The council has already rejected that idea, and it should not be on the agenda again unless the council can back away from the proposed settlement even further. That outcome, we can all be sure, is not the goal of Villaraigosa and Delgadillo. Theoretically, the city is currently in a 90-day assessment period. That's what I meant by saying they are not ticketing people during this period of time, during which the LAPD is allowed to arrest people for camping during daylight hours, and we've been told the council will receive updates. But now the issue is on the council's agenda, scheduled for Tuesday, November 14th, in closed session. So they already did it, and they essentially put it off. If it actually proceeds to a vote, then the council must once again show the fortitude it demonstrated in September and reject any settlement that results in people setting up house on downtown sidewalks. Of course, that's a distortion of what they're doing. It means they are finding some place to sleep when there is no place to sleep. That's not setting up house. Sort of a casual way of sort of like suggesting in Santa Cruz, oh, people come from all over the world, they flock to Santa Cruz, because that's what Rutkin claims is going to happen if the sleeping ban is lifted. Because it'll be so, you know, so pleasant to be here. Approving it in its current form, no matter what the high-profile proponents claim, would be a disaster. It would send a message to those on the streets as well as those who have tried to bring homes, employment, and sanitation to Skid Row that neither group matters. It would tell the homeless that they can be sequestered in downtown and allowed to live in a filthy de facto ghetto. It would also be a blow to stakeholders who worked hard to turn downtown into a viable community. It's a lot of fun watching the LA Times tell the homeless what's good for them. And now they want the police to arrest them and drive them away only for their own good because they don't want them in a stinking ghetto. Perhaps most egregious, it would declare to all of Los Angeles that deplorable conditions are permitted to fester in downtown, but not in any other neighborhood, especially affluent ones on the west side or in the valley. This is not hyperbole. Take a look at Skid Row after dark, after most of the police have left, and realize that the council, if the council approves the settlement, then the situation will worsen as it has before. Actually, that's not true. What happened in Miami in the Pottinger decision, when more homeless people appeared on the streets, suddenly the city got its shit together and started providing more services out of embarrassment. So the LA Times is probably whistling through its ass here on this issue and simply expressing its old prejudice that let the police do their usual cleanup, clear them out, treat the homeless like trash procedures that they always use. On September 20th, the council took up a proposed settlement to the lawsuit known as Jones versus the City of Los Angeles. A suggested compromise was backed by the ACLU and a trio of powerful city officials, Delgadillo, Villaraigosa, and Police Chief William Bratton. In the effort to end a long legal battle, those three were prepared to sell out downtown to allow the homeless to camp in the community between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. 7 days a week. They had to be 10 feet from the entrance of any business, but no reasonable person believes that would be enforced with any regularity. Why not? Why wouldn't people do that with any regularity? Why wouldn't they, if they can camp, why would they insist on being closer than 10 feet? I mean, I don't, you know, follow the reasoning. Fortunately, downtown Councilwoman Jan Perry led the charge in the council meeting in closed session, voted 10-3 to reject the settlement. It was a gutsy and important decision, especially considering the current political climate, where many defer to the mayor's wishes. If it comes time for another vote, then we urge City Council to do the right thing and reject the settlement. Don't let Villaraigosa, Delgadillo, and Bratton bulldoze their way through City Hall. Cast a vote that will improve the lives of the homeless. continue the momentum of downtown and send a message of more rational thinking in Los Angeles. The kind of argument that merchants were using against workers, saying these workers don't really need higher wages, it'll only be bad for them. Because in the end, we'll have to cut back on jobs, and they'll be disadvantaged. It's a pretty cynical kind of claim, considering what happened to the minimum wage in Santa Fe and San Francisco. And I speak not because I know what happened, but because I know that the merchants didn't claim that this happened in places where the minimum wage was actually raised on a citywide basis. And I bring that up because that's important, because paying people less and making them work two or three jobs and raising their rents is likely to create more homelessness. And that's the theme of this show, Rights for People Who Are Poor. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Give a call in.
I'm talking with
Heidi Allen.
And Heidi, you're here at Lulu Carpenter's out front in a kind of a quiet evening. There are about, what, five people outside in the outside area. And you're a regular here at Lulu Carpenter's, so you haven't been here for 3 weeks.
Yes, I am.
And I've just kind of acquainted you with some concerns that others have had about Lulu Carpenter's, but you've assured me that that hasn't been your experience, your concerns. You haven't seen any abusive behavior by the owner, Manafree Serena?
No, I haven't at all. Actually, it's been fine and quiet, and I haven't seen anything out of the ordinary or that would be a problem.
And you have a laptop, so some who had expressed concerns that Manafree may be rather tight on students studying around 6, telling them to pack up and move along. You've been here around 6 with your computer?
Yes, I have, and I haven't seen any problems.
And you would say you come down, what, two or three days a week in the morning?
Yeah, about that.
Times in the afternoon?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you know Manafree by sight?
Yes, I would recognize him.
And have you ever chatted with him? Or?
No, I haven't, but I know who he is and that he's the owner, so.
How long have you been a patron of Lulu Carpenter's?
Oh, a couple years, maybe 3 or 4 years. So it's my favorite coffee shop in the Santa Cruz area. So
you are not a student now, but you were?
No, I wasn't. I worked for a camp in the area. So
camp being?
Mount Hermon.
Which is
it's a family camp. I've spent time working with children. So, yeah, it's great. And I've come back years, and I live here now, and this is my favorite place to be. So it's great. I love it, and I've never had any problems.
Again, we've been talking with?
With Heidi Allen.
Thanks, Heidi.
No problem.
Actually, his name is Shane Maxfield, the fellow with the bunny, the young man panhandling.
Yes, I've seen him with the bunny. I didn't know his name. I've never chatted with him before, but I've never seen him causing any problems.
And what, did you see him here near Lulu Carpenter's? Or?
I've seen him in the area of this part of Pacific or whatever we're on.
He didn't harass you with demands for money or
no,
have his attack rabbit bite you?
No, nothing too Monty Python-esque, so I think we're fine.
Right. Well, that, of course, is going to be the subject of a protest here next Friday between 4 and 8, where there was, of course, a report that, well, both from individuals watching and from Shane Maxfield himself, that Manafree was threatening, abusive, and this man felt compelled to call the police. And when the police came, they gave not Manafree, but this man, Shane, a ticket for panhandling with obscene language when he responded to Lulu Carpenter's manager, Manafree, by saying, "You fucker." Because he was so angry that he was being, you know, apparently being told to move on. We didn't want you in this part of town and so forth. That's the story that comes, and I'm interested in getting information. You are giving me a different story, and I'm trying to be fair and balanced.
It's always very good. I wasn't here to witness the incident, but I think it's very disappointing if that's the behavior that was elicited by either side. So I think it's a disappointment if the manager was or the owner was behaving in such a way. So, but not having seen the event, I can't argue either way. But I haven't seen any problem behavior from either party.
And you're often here outside in the outside chairs.
Yes, that's correct.
In fact, this is your usual locale. You go inside.
I usually like to be outside. So.
Well, I expect you to keep an eye on the proceedings and get back to us if you see anything.
No problem. I'll love to.
You have my card with my number.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Heidi.
And we'll be back in a moment. So that was a positive account of Lulu Carpenters. And indeed, I've got to say, you know, when I patronized Lulu Carpenters, and I have for years, I used to hold meetings there. I thought it was a little hoity-toity. But I didn't have any problems when I was in Lulu Carpenters. I usually was in the back. I wasn't informed of problems there. Now, this is probably pre-2003, because since 2003 I have been banned from Lulu Carpenters. But come down tomorrow. It's not between 4 and 8. It's between 4:30 and 6:30. We're doing an abbreviated version. Judge for yourself, you know, and give us your own opinion, your own thoughts. And do support ending the sleeping ban, suspending the sleeping ban for the winter. There's just too many people outside and no place for them to go. And they need to have at least the knowledge that they aren't going to be arrested for non-criminal survival behavior. So come and support that if you don't support anything else. Here's a little more from the street.
Talking with John Maurer in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. John, you say Thursday night, last night on the 26th, you saw some, turf war stuff?
Mainly turf war stuff. It was get off my street. I'm big and bad. This is my street. Get off of it. Stuff like that.
And did you recognize, are these people of...
I knew one of them, but...
Were these individuals having a dispute, or was it a gang area? Was it ethnic? Was it merchant versus homeless?
It wasn't ethnic. It wasn't merchant versus homeless. It was just somebody pissed off at somebody else or something. There was just a bunch of kids around. I'm not sure really what their connections were, but...
And we don't even know what happened. So why are we even talking to you, John?
Really? That's what I was wondering.
Well, we're going to figure this one out. We'll get back to you.
And we have Madison on the phone again with a suggestion. Hi, Madison.
Hey, yeah, so the support structure for AIDS in San Francisco with the gay community there is really solid and strong and understanding. And one of my assistants got AIDS on his first experience, and he's only 22. And that was the plan we came up with because San Jose was so non-accepting of that.
Madison, I've got bad news for you. You know, homelessness in San Francisco is much harsher in many ways than in Santa Cruz because of the... You know, the inner city aspect to it, and because the Newsom administration, and as well as the Brown administration before it, has cracked down using sleeping ban tickets big time against poor and homeless people for the same reasons that the Santa Cruz City does.
Yeah, but the funds for AIDS. I mean, Lloyd called me later and he said, "God, that was the best decision of my life."
Right. Well, if you're upper middle class and you have a place to be, I would say you may well be right. Thanks for calling. Phone lines are open, 427-3772, and while I'm waiting, more from the street.
Without going into any details, you find Bookshop Santa Cruz pretty homeless-friendly?
Yeah, I think so. They got a nice bathroom. It's usually clean. Well, I clean it up once in a while myself.
Rumor has it that some homeless people have even let at least one or two sleep in front of the building at night.
I'm not going to go that far to say anything like that.
It's just a rumor I've heard.
It's a rumor, yeah. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but...
And Ryan Coonerty, one of the main workers and possibly part owner of the Bookshop, city council member favors the continued sleeping ban, so it's, I guess, that's Neil Coonerty always did when he was on the council as well.
And Neil is on the council again, isn't he?
He's on the board of supervisors.
Yeah, so.
Even more powerful than he was before.
Yeah.
You also, just finally, the Lulu Carpenters thing, which we didn't get on tape before, you've had a general impression that it's less than friendly when you've been there?
Yeah, very less than friendly towards me. They're just not very homeless-friendly.
When you had your Fuck the Pig sign on your hat.
Oh, this is just last year, actually. And Fuck the Pigs was 3 years ago. 4 years ago now. So.
No further harassment from police
since
then? Have you been panhandling since?
Yes, I have.
And you haven't had any problems?
No.
Any other comments or advice to panhandlers out there?
Oh, just follow the rules. Don't cause any waves. Just be quiet.
You caused waves. You wore a sign, and you actually won a court case and changed the law.
Yes. I hope to have started a revolution, I hope, here in Santa Cruz.
We're still waiting for the masses to follow you.
Yeah, there's something going on down in L.A., too. So, I mean, there's something going on.
In San Diego and in Fresno.
Really? Is it spreading?
Well, I mean, there's homeless being mistreated systematically in all those cities as well as in Santa Cruz.
That's everywhere, though. I mean, in all times, so.
Where people are mistreated, there comes a time when some of them stand up and say no thanks.
And that's what I did, and I won.
There you have it. Anything else?
No.
Thanks, John. We've been talking with?
You're welcome. Yeah, what?
Again, for our records, your name?
John Meller.
Thank you, John.
Yes.
So it's about 10 to 10 in front of the Pacific Trading Company, another illegal musician, a man with a harp, and another guy with a, oh, I don't know, like a small guitar. Store is closed, so that's relevant. There's no music coming out, but a lot of folks on the streets. Hey, where's the music? The Spanish-speaking artist who does sort of acrylic paints on the sidewalk or spray paints is out there doing his thing. And at the corner of Soquel and Pacific, it's the drummer guy and a musician. All right, house tricks tonight, folks. We're free radio.
What?
We're free radio. Any comments?
Rock on. Good.
No hassles from the gendarmes?
Oh, earlier we did, but it was all good. He was pretty nice about it, so we're...
So did they tell you to move on, or did they just... What was their problem?
I guess, like, we were jamming in front of the theater, and they said that, that they were jamming too loud, and people couldn't conduct business, and so it was like, yeah, okay.
Were you jamming too loud?
Not necessarily. I just don't think that they wanted us there. I don't know why.
How long had you been...
A big crowd around, and, probably was giving them business, but oh well.
What was the reaction of the crowd? Were they sympathetic to the police, sympathetic to you?
Well, they just kind of walked off and didn't really say anything, but...
How are you doing financially? How's it going?
Not really that good tonight, but it's all good. We're just jamming anyway, so...
And we're talking with?
My name's Dane.
Yes.
Noah playing the drum.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. What was your name?
I'm Robert.
Robert, nice to meet you, man.
How do you do? And it's a few moments later. I'm in front of the Del Mar, where apparently the drummer and the guitarist were playing. And there's a man on a platform with a piano where he was, in white face, doing some Saturday night playing. And here's a guy with the signs on the sidewalk. And are these signs new?
What?
Are these signs new?
Yes.
Let's read them here. And the earth died screaming as I lay bleeding. A quote from...
Leonard Cohen.
Okay. In the age of super boredom, rape, and mediocrity, celebrate relentless menace to society by...
KMFDM.
Who is...
Well, it depends who you ask. Kill motherfucking Depeche Mode or Kansas Manufacturers Flying Death Machines?
Indeed. And the same group, ask not what you can do for your country, ask what your country did to you. Is this some sort of attack on our government?
Absolutely.
Now, you've been here in Santa Cruz for a while. Is this a routine for attracting tourists and soliciting money?
No.
And what, in fact, is your purpose here?
Public education.
And how many people have you felt you've been able to educate here?
That's a question I ask myself every day.
Have any police officers informed you that they've repented and are joining the opposition?
No.
What about anybody deciding they're so angered by your signs they're joining the police department?
No.
Anything other than that?
Apathy rules.
Well, it's Friday night. How long have you been out here tonight?
Off and on, 3 hours.
Any unusual incidents happen? I see you have a man behind you, kind of a backup, got mad skills, will get wild. Can you step forward, sir, and clarify what this means? What are you trying to say here?
I was handed this sign. It's his sign. He gave it to me for the moment.
You are one of his minions.
For the moment. For the moment, yes.
And what actual mad skills do you think he's referring to?
Well, quite possibly the guitar on my back, but just to have a funny sign, I guess.
Now, there's a man leaning against a trash can with another guitar. I mean, what is this guitar heaven going on here?
Yes, certainly.
And are the people patronizing these $8.25 movies, or perhaps more, kicking down quarters to the penniless musicians on the street?
I suppose a little bit of both.
So, for example, the last quarter you got was how many hours ago?
a few days ago.
I see. Well, there's a man with a piano to your right. Is there competition here, or is it cooperation?
A little bit of both. Yeah, apparently the musicians made up an hour per spot rule, and sometimes they abide by that. Sometimes, you know, people get the good spots, you know. Sometimes you get, you know, poor spots.
Now, what about this man's public education campaign, which you are apparently contributing to? What is your name, educator?
Pan.
And Pan, what is your name, Pan's associate?
Ian.
Ian, have you noticed any increased savvy in the people passing by?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. This is a pretty interesting spot to be at, yeah.
So what have you seen that you might be interested in out here in Radioland?
Well, this is probably the coolest town I've ever been in. I mean, it's almost magical, this town, I think.
And have you been traveling much? I mean, is this your...
A little bit. California, up and down California, into Seattle and Canada and Mexico a little bit, and Maui, into Florida and Texas. But this is the coolest place I've ever been.
So you've actually been on the streets of other cities doing something similar? Or?
Yeah, in my hometown of Walnut Creek, I did this for a year. I've been here 2 weeks.
This being...
Play guitar on the streets for a living.
And how did that go?
Well, it's bad. It sucks living without money, but it's good to. I love the guitar. I love playing music, and so, you know, this is what makes me happy the most out of anything else, I guess. In exchange for a little bit of loneliness and not having any money, I guess, you know.
In Walnut Creek, I mean, how were the police and how was the public treating you?
Well, they only fed the homeless twice a week. I basically had to steal to survive if I wasn't unemployed. They were a bunch of... It's a really rich community, so they didn't really give me any money when I was playing guitar either, so it was rough.
You know, it's interesting. Some would regard that as a kind of a paradox, that a rich community would not give money. But actually, I've found, and tell me if this is your experience, that people who are poor tend to give more money than people who are wealthy. Well, what's your experience on that?
Well, to me, it's probably a simple observation that rich people don't give their money away because that's how they got rich. They just essentially hold on to all their money and are hoarding it. That's probably most likely how they got rich, so to speak, in one level or another.
So for a year, you tolerated the rich people of Walnut Creek?
Certainly, yeah.
And you played music for them?
Yeah.
And how many hours a day were you on the street?
All day long.
And were you in one spot, or...?
I went... numerous different spots, but mostly like 3 or 4 spots. I'd play about anywhere from 3 to 8 hours a day.
And your average take was?
Nothing to $5 a day.
And the average attitude of the police was?
The police were actually pretty nice to me. They did kick... It's the police don't really have to do their job there because the public, the people are actually behind, you know, the scene, sort of, will in that area. They kick me out of all the private spots. It's privately owned, a lot of the places there, to the best places to play. So I'd end up like somewhere on the main street, but you know, the cops would not really have to tell me. The business owners themselves would tell me to go, you know, this far away from the building or not in this area, basically.
And did you follow the dictates of the all-powerful merchants?
Yes. Yeah, I had to, I guess, you know.
And were there, in fact, laws that...
You ain't got bad skills, you ain't getting wild.
There you go. A critic steps up here.
It's his sign.
It's his sign. Oh, it's not Pan's sign. It's Pan Jr. or Pan Sr. or whatever this questionable individual's current moniker is. I don't know what he... we'll let him explain in a moment. But so...
Those who advocate homelessness are often those who exploit homelessness the most.
you have some words of wisdom, perhaps at a distance, inaudible, but nonetheless probably worth hearing if the man steps up to the mic. So Walnut Creek, a year. Why did you stay there a year?
It was my hometown. And
what did your family think of this kind of behavior?
My dad's ashamed of me. My mom feels sad.
But your brothers and sisters?
My brother is ashamed, too. My half-sister actually thinks it's cool, but she probably feels really sad, too, you know, that I live on the streets and stuff.
Have they attempted to institutionalize you yet for mental problems?
Yeah, actually. My dad does think I'm pretty out there.
And we're going to hear more of this tragic tale on Sunday, if you want to come back. 9:30 in the morning is when the show begins. It goes till 1 o'clock. I will also be down at Lulu Carpenter's providing my own brand of 7-Eleven coffee. If you want to show up at 4:30 tomorrow to boycott bigotry or to fight the sleeping ban, that's up to you. And if you got any thoughts for me, you can put them on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, and I will listen to them and call you back. Coming up next is From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis, some decent music to compensate for all the chatter. So stay tuned.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Let's get rid of a bunch of trouble there. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. And we are here every Thursday night from 8 to 11. Hopefully we will play a bunch of stuff from the 60s and 70s that you enjoy. Because that's what we're all about here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Doing the best for our community. And hopefully if you want to be a part of our community, you'll help support us. So anyway, hang in there. There will be plenty of music and stuff coming down for your listening enjoyment, I assure you. Like I said, we're Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at 101.1 FM in the Northern Monterey Bay Area. And you can also find us on the web at www.freakradio.org and also at radio.indymedia.org. A couple of great places to find us, and we're occasionally on other places all around the weird wide web. Well, let's get right back into music. We'll open up the Brew of the Week here in a few minutes and hopefully have some really great times. Let's check out some Santana.
Forget about it.